that's actually down at Brown's Park. It's down on Green River. Brian's got a lot of job up there. Guy that he's got up there was kicking his butt, so he asked if I could go up there for... I went up there.
Vacation.
No, no vacation.
That's a vacation.
I think it sounds like a signature.
I thought she was hurt.
The one I forgot was 8 degrees.
You ready? Okay, as long as it's clear, then we're good. I'd like to welcome everyone out to our city council meeting tonight, November 22nd, 6:30, regular meeting. We're gonna start tonight by the Pledge of Allegiance offered by, led by Paul, and the opening prayer by Lynn.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Father in heaven, we're so grateful for all the many blessings that we enjoy in this little valley. We're so thankful for the people that put so much into it to make what it is, and that they can see that it's touched by you, and that we pray that we'll be able to have the moisture we'll need this year, and we pray that we'll be able to go over our agendas and problems, that we'll be able to resolve them and peacefully, and that we'll be able to make a mark and be able to go forward with it. And we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen.
I'd like to thank Natalie tonight for sitting in for Jeannie. She went to the kids' wrestling match, so thank you, Natalie, for being a recorder tonight. We'll start with a roll call.
So I call you out, right?
Yes. Yep.
All right. So Lynn?
Here.
Paul?
Here.
Mike?
Here.
Russ?
Here.
Robbie?
Here.
He's them.
He's kind of excused. His wife fell down some steps, and I think he ended up in the emergency room.
No good.
Okay, next is approval of minutes of our October 25th, 2022 regular city council meeting held at 6:30 p.m.
Motion to hire Sunrise. Who was it? Seconded by? It's blank.
I'd have to go back and look up my deal.
Which is probably not a big deal, but probably in the record.
It'd be a big deal where everybody voted yes on it.
All this motion right through the minutes. October 25th, 2022, the 6:30 regular meeting.
Now I'll second it. Okay, the motion by Paul, seconded by Lynn, to approve the minutes of the October 25th regular city council meeting held at 6:30. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Next is approval of claims register dated 11/5/2022 to 11/18/2022 in the amount of $118,958.85.
Amazon. Went to my house.
So I guess that the Deseret Tree Works, they just charge us a flat rate, daily rate, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's $3,200 a day.
$3,200.
Oh, $3,200, yeah.
Yeah, $3,250, isn't it?
Yeah, $3,250.
$3,250 a day.
I
see they're over across the street today.
Yeah.
Neil and Diane are getting...
They've met our contract, so they're done for with us for the year.
Well, they sure done a good job.
Yes, they do. They're so good with the public.
I got a question. Colter, on your Easy Street mix?
Yeah.
Have you got prices from anybody else other than Granite?
No, I could shop around for it though.
Yeah, you might want to, because I know there's places in Utah County you can get it. I don't know what price difference is, but it might be a good idea to shop around.
Do you know, like, the companies?
I don't, but I know, that paving outfit that, Eccles.
Maybe Staker Parsons?
Yeah, Staker Parsons, I'm sure, has it.
Okay, I'll ask her.
Okay.
Save a lot of travel time, huh, and cost?
Yeah, get a lot closer probably.
So this semi-services for $3,000, what was that on?
It's the repair on the 450 and the Sandy.
Wow. It's right here. What'd they do to it?
They took it out of the truck, they took it out of it.
It was not bent.
Stuff on the back, put all the bunch of stuff in it, fixed all the lights on the 450.
$450, is that it?
Just that, yeah, it's just a trouble dump truck. And we got one for $1,400 down here too.
There's some other parts. I picked up tail lights and the whips that go on the plows and a toolbox for one of the trucks.
Anybody got any more questions? Now I'll make a motion that we approve the invoice registered dated 11/5/2022 to 11/18/2022. In the amount of $118,958.85.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, the motion by Russell, seconded by Ronnie, to approve claim register dated 11/5/2022 to 11/18/2022 in the amount of $118,958.85. Roll call.
Lynn?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Mike?
I don't vote.
Yes.
Ronnie?
Yes. Okay, no requisitions tonight. So next is our discussion action on our sneak spraying project. Devin's here, so I'm going to let him take over.
Thank you. So I have to block.
We did.
It's like we can talk about these.
Yeah.
That's the extra-free tab. This is a copy of a letter from Sunrise recommending award to the apparent low bidder, Spade Excavation. There are a couple more things that need to be verified. We need to get RD approval. got to run them through the federal system and make sure they don't have any orders not to give them any money. If they do have any of those issues, they won't be eligible for the contract, and we move to the next lowest bidder from that point.
So have you worked with these guys before?
We have not.
Do you know where they're from?
They're out of Draper. They do a lot of subdivision work. We've seen them around. We just got their qualifications packet that has some prior jobs and references on there that we'll reach out to. We typically reach out to other Sunrise offices as well, because a lot of times we'll have our guys in Vernal or Salt Lake or Springville that have worked with other contractors in the cabinet that have done work before. So we'll check on it. We did get one recommendation from one of the other bidders that was in there that said, well, those guys are good, but yeah, you take those with a grain of salt. So. We were excited. We have kind of a positive indication from the previous bid that there was a lot of interest and a lot of bidders on that one. And so we were hopeful that we'd get that, and we did end up getting four bids that were below the estimate that we put together for it, which for these days is. We're doing cartwheels over that. That was great. We did have one that was kind of a pie-in-the-sky number from Earth Services that everybody sent and guessed me. The numbers. 5.4 million.
We kept asking, we go, are you sure that wasn't zero added?
That's what it says. She kind of write it out. Yeah. The four lower bids that we did get did look legitimate and competitive. Just one local bidder, Terry Brotherson, was the fourth bidder there. He's a little bit higher than the bottom three there. There's one minor math error in the Jane B. excavating bid that didn't change results.
Did JCI got plans?
JCI, we did have contact with them, did ask questions even up to the day before, but we didn't end up getting a bid from them.
And they were on the pre-construction bid and everything too.
Maybe it's busy.
Yeah. I think that's typical for what we've seen with a lot of them. Most contractors busy. I think bidding this out at the time we did and allowing the flexibility that we have, and then along with the project itself of being kind of up the canyon, not a lot of different property owners to coordinate with, and there's no connections on it, it's a straight run down the canyon. I think it was an attractive project for a lot of guys. We're pleased with those results. So again, this recommendation that we've provided, we've recommended awarding it to the apparent low bid of spade excavating, and it's contingent upon receiving satisfactory response to further requests for information, concurrence from the council, obviously, RD approval, and upon submittal of any other items required prior to award contract. We do think we have everything that the contract documents have required and laid out as of today. They just sent a couple more forms in today that we needed to provide for RD. So with any luck, we'll be able to get through their process as quickly as well, and then we'll move forward with providing the notice of award. Any other questions for me on this?
Would they try to start that? What are the time frames? I mean, would they try to do that in the winter, or just more likely wait for
the... Well, the access is pretty tough up there.
So it can get pretty deep up there.
Yeah. Even our pre-bid meeting, we got up to the base of the canyon there, and it wasn't looking promising for a pickup. It pulled it up, wore it side by side.
Some more than I cut away, see, you know.
Yeah, so probably April.
Yeah,
before they start getting the frost out of there.
Didn't you have a completion, was it July 1st or August 1st on that?
I'll have to double check, I want to think it was closer to the end of the summer, because like I said, it was.
I don't know, it was the end of August.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I couldn't remember what date, but I know there was a completion date for like, okay.
This isn't really related to this project, but it's the treatment building.
Yeah.
If we awarded the bid, I can't remember what we're at with that.
So we're still, that's, decided to split it off, decided to split it off as a separate bid package. It was not included in this big spring pipeline.
Right.
Bid. We are making a couple of adjustments based on a design review we had a couple weeks ago, mayor and staff. We hope to be able to get that through drinking water and rural development review in December and advertise in January.
Okay. That's not much going on, I.
Yeah, that's tough. So that includes the treatment plant building, as well as the well building and putting the well. It's all right up there together. As far as the well drilling, we've got some updated costs for Marcus. When we bid it out last fall, High Plains Drilling was the selected bidder on it. Of the two, they were way lower than the outfit at Arizona that we had, that we couldn't accept anyways, because it was non-responsive. But with the length of time between when we opened the bids and when we wrapped up the property coordination, there's some questions on the legal side of what we can award. His cost obviously gone up in that time frame, and so we sent the contract information over to Kevin Daniels to get an opinion on whether we can move forward with awarding it to Marcus and execute a change order to account for the increase in material costs in that time frame, or whether we're going to rebid the project. So we're hoping that we're able to move forward with High Plains Drilling, not to have to go through another bid process for it. We do think that the revised pricing that he's provided is fair. Pending that legal opinion and the thumbs up from the city on that, we'll be able to execute the contract there and move forward with that as well.
So this bid here is locked between now and April?
Yes.
Yeah.
Between now and when it's completed.
If we're able to provide a notice of award on this, then we'll be able to move forward with getting under contract, even though they won't be able to start work for a few months. But the city will be in a good place where.
I would imagine they probably figured that in.
Yeah. Yeah, and with the schedule that we've got, it won't affect them. So
we need a motion on that?
Yes, we do. To accept that a little bit.
Okay, let's see. I'll make a motion that we approve the bid to Spade Excavating for the Sneak Springs project in the amount of $643,416.76.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have the motion by Russell, seconded by Paul, to approve a little bit of Spade Excavating for the Sneak Spring Pipeline Project. Dollar amount of $643,416.76. Roll call.
Mike? Nick?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Brett?
Yes.
Rodney?
Yes. Do we need to sign this, or is yours just good enough on that that you can forward?
We'll give the notice of awards for you to sign when we're ready for that.
Okay.
This is just recognition.
Okay.
When we hire the Carl.
We might have to set up a Zoom call with Kevin Daniels, because he did have a couple of questions. I know he was out to genius. You know what, it might be as good to get you on the phone and...
Yeah.
And him, and just do a Zoom call on his questions he had on that contract, because you can probably answer them better than I can, so... To get that done. All right, next, discussion action, proposal on bathrooms at the park and under the cemetery. I asked Justin to come, because I know we have a lot of questions on our grant with our parks, and so I thought Justin can come and explain it.
He was talking into it.
He won't do this one for you?
He gets to leave. Do you want me to just answer questions, or give you an update on where we're at, or what do you want me to do? I can give you a little...
Give us a little update, first of all.
I can say a quick backstory. I know that it's maybe a little bit redundant, but when Ken and I were on council, it's probably been, two or three years ago, we got talking about some park improvements. And it just so happened there was a grant opportunity to look at some upgrades. The restroom was one of the main things that we focused on, some sprinklers, picnic tables, playground equipment, and then get the power underground. That was kind of the main components for the scope of the project. And not long after that, I think we implemented the RAP tax, the recreation tax, which was kind of, in my mind, a little bit fortuitous, because it can help offset some of the city match on that with that RAP tax. So we moved forward, and it took a long time to finally get the contracts executed, but they have been returned, and so at this point, we can move forward with that project. I was just talking to Shane a little bit about that, and we feel like that rather than just moving ahead with putting the restroom where we think it should be, we wanted to have some public involvement. We got John Bradley, John? Dave? David Bradley involved with, he's a landscape designer, just to kind of help us wrap our arms around what the park, we want the park to be in the future. So we wanted to do that phase first, so we, you know, there may be a better place for the restroom. There may be some places where we want to put some walkways within the park, because right now, if you're in a wheelchair or something, you can't, it's all grass. And so we want to look at some, we want to kind of look at a holistic approach of the whole area, rather than just focus in on a couple of projects, knowing that those are the eligible projects for this grant. I recruited Heidi and Molly, Heidi Kelso and Molly Brotherson, to help coordinate those efforts. And anybody else that wants to help is welcome to. The last discussion I had with them is we thought we ought to come to the council or the CRA meeting, whichever is best, and have that discussion first on what maybe the council would like to see as far as the park, and then reach out to the public. If we get too many, chefs in the kitchen, it's hard to make. It's good to have input, but you can't consider everyone's and do everything that everybody wants. So
you don't have this landscaper first, or you don't have kind of come to the city council with a proposal?
We have kind of a blank canvas that the landscape designer gave us of the park and what's there now. And that's what we would kind of like to do, is just have a collaborative meeting where we look at that, and just so I don't want to be making all the decisions, and or the three of us. I think it's the community's park, it's not my park or one person's park, so I think it makes sense to have some public involvement
Whether we get that or not, but maybe we'll get some, maybe we'll get none. But I think it's worth going through that process. So once that takes place, and then we can start, I mean, we can buy picnic tables and things like that now, some of those features. The exact location of the restroom, maybe, I don't know, I'm still not settled on where that should be. It needs to be on the park, in the park somewhere, but where it makes sense. You know, where the old restroom is now is, I think it's in a good location, and, but I don't know if it's the best location, I just don't know for sure. So, that's where we're at today. Through the course of all this, Mike Bowles came and said he was interested in helping put a trailside restroom in, because when he walks, there's a, he told him there needed to be a restroom somewhere on the trail, and my opinion on that is, why not use the restroom at the park? If it's not that far from the, you just walk across the street if you need to use the restroom. So, and the idea of just having a restroom sitting out there on the trail somewhere doesn't, in my mind, doesn't really make sense. Would it be a big, nice restroom, or would it just be a small, you know, just a one hole or something? I don't know what he had in mind. So I think from that conversation, it's kind of evolved into having one at the cemetery. Is kind of how that all got started. And I'm not here to debate or argue one way or the other. I've been focused in on the park, and so that's where my energy has gone, is to do the improvements in the park, not just the restroom, but the improvements overall. And I know that as a citizen, knowing that we have limited resources, to me, it makes more sense to build a nice restroom and invest in the park. And that's just my argument for that. I'm pretty indifferent on the restroom at the cemetery, really. I mean, if we can afford it, and that's what the city council wants to do, I'm supportive of that. But like I said, if I'm speaking from a citizen, taxpayer, makes sense to put your investment in the park, where everybody uses it more. So.
Well, I know me going out there, a lot of people walk that cemetery. A lot of people, they make crews up through the cemetery, and there's as many up in there as there is on the trail.
If they go up through the cemetery, it works a mile.
Yeah.
With the trail.
Yeah.
Well,
and I don't know why
I've seen them walking up there. Maybe it makes sense to have one there for people that are used, you know, going to the cemetery for gravesides or to.
Now, is the one at the park now, is that restroom hooked into the sewer, or is it also sunk?
That would be part of this project, is to hook that into the sewer.
See, to me, I've always thought that it ought to go on the west side of the park down there to where it could also be used with the rodeo grounds, and then future, if we take and make that a recreational area where the rodeo grounds is, and move the rodeo grounds down to the Concoy, then again we got a restroom down there that'll facilitate tennis court.
Well, there's a restroom down there for the rodeo grounds. There's already a restroom there.
There's not much of a restroom, from what I understand. I haven't been to it.
It's pretty nice.
I've been in it maybe once or twice is all. I don't really remember.
What is there, four-star,
what it looks like, but...
Is there two toilets on the boys?
I think there's just one urinal, two toilets, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's one urinal, two toilets, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah.
But that's a hearse.
No, yeah, on the hearse, I think there's three toilets and a hearse, so...
Yeah, so I guess I've been in there at rodeo.
My question is, so this grant was for park improvement.
Yes.
Cemetery is a completely different thing. I mean...
Yeah,
we even use that grant for improvements in the cemetery?
No, I don't think that location would be eligible because it's not necessarily a
last year. I just know that Sandra, I talked to her today, she'd really like to have that.
Yeah.
Up there at the cemetery. Because she says she wanted for a long time. She feels like if she don't get it this time,
she's probably not going to see it.
Well...
And really, myself personally, I've been out there and I've had to go to the bathroom. And it's to walk through down there at the forest. Depends on where you're at in the cemetery.
Well, it depends on where you're at. Depends on where you're at.
And if you don't buy into your grant, if it's perpetual funds it's going to pay for it, then, you know, and according to Dave, talking to Dave and Sandra, the money's there, it just depends on where you want to spend it.
Well, that's one thing that we kind of, when I was on the council, I know I don't have the same influence that I had when I was there, but that was part of the, I mean, they've been using that restroom for years. And when we started talking about a restroom there, nobody, because they talked about using perpetual funds to do that because people have been using that, that was part of our funding source to help cover the cost of that restroom. Now, whether that's, I've heard some question whether that's, we can even use perpetual care funds for that or not. I don't know the answer to that. But maybe with the reserves in the CDRA and with the RAP tax, maybe we don't need to draw on that. I don't know, we'd have to look at that. But I think you could probably borrow against, we have to talk to Dave about borrowing against the reserves and maybe paying it back through the RAP tax for the park improvements. I think we're on the hook for $130,000 to do that. And I was, you know, kind of banking on some of the cemetery funds to help with, I think $25,000 is what I had in the budget to help with the restroom. The rest is going to be grant money through the...
What are we doing with the RAP tax right now?
I think they said it was going to get something like $85,000.
It won't be that high. It'll be closer probably to about 60, I think.
Are you getting 30 a year, roughly, or what is it coming in at?
I haven't seen the update lately. It fluctuates every month. The one month it was 7,200. The next month it was back down to like 4,500. So we was figuring right around 60 is where we were hoping that it would come in at.
Yeah. And like I say, this isn't a battle of wills here. I'm pretty indifferent about the restroom at the park.
Well, I'm just saying I'm buying your $25,000. Sounds like we got that in the RAP tax where we could use, there would be no question you can use that for the park.
Yeah.
One thing that...
Well, there's $130,000 match, right?
Yeah.
$100,000.
Yeah, $130,000. Part of that match was the power doing their, not part of the $130,000, just was aside from that, the power company putting in the...
In kind of our own labor and all that stuff.
Yeah, so we can count that as in kind. And the public works, I think I had some help from them too with prepping and things like that. So, you know, all in all, I think, I mean, there's a lot of need out there. The grant is, the total package is $576,000 to do all those improvements. Whether we can get all that done this day and age still remains to be seen just because of the environment we're in and bidding and stuff. But you know, it's not complicated work. It's a lot of it's just landscaping and sprinklers, and a lot of it's just equipment purchase, picnic tables and stuff. So that's kind of where we are, and I'm prepared to, I mean, if it comes down to whether we put a restroom at the park or the cemetery, you know where my vote is.
Well, I don't know why you can't have both of them.
Well, maybe that's an argument or a debate that you got. I don't want to say argument, but a debate you guys can hammer out. But
I know talking to John Hadley, well, the emails back and forth with Dave and him, one suggestion he made is we're not taking anything out from mowing lawns right now at the cemetery. That's all coming out of the general fund.
Mm.
And he said we ought to be pulling some of that cemetery maintenance that we're paying now out of the general fund, out of that.
Well, that's what that's for, the perpetual care.
Yeah. Really, that was one of his recommendations. He says that's probably why your fund is so high, is because you haven't been pulling out what you should be for maintaining lawns.
Mm. What does it cost us for the lawn for the summer?
When we had a bid out, it was $4,000 a month.
For 12 months, right?
For 12 months a year.
Yeah. That's all the city properties don't have anything, but I know that's one thing that he did say in his email that...
Well, I think we should anyway. I'm in favor of it. I'm in favor of both places.
And I would think that if we build a restroom, I'd like to see it on the west end.
Southwest end, I think would serve the both the trail.
Southwest.
It's down the corner.
Get sewer there?
Yeah.
Does...
I think so.
Does the trailer court have sewer?
Yeah.
That was my biggest concerns is we may be limited on where we can put it without a pump, but we have to look at that. That would have to be something to be considered.
You know where we put it on the west end? We ran that new line for the train car.
Yeah.
If you put it on the...
Very shallow with the...
Yeah.
Yeah, if you put it on the south end, you wouldn't be able to get...
Maybe there's a way that you could, because we'll have a road, well, it'd be a long way, it's probably to hook on where, I don't know where cars are hooked on, but...
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. To hook it into the sewer, it'd be more feasible to have it down on the west end, where you can hook it in.
It would have to catch that sewer, the train cars, you'd have to put it about halfway in the middle of the park, because it's shallow.
In between, you're talking about?
Somewhere around the tennis court or the pickleball court.
Horseshoe pits or something right there?
Yeah.
The horseshoe pits are probably around there. Okay, now if you do that, if you put that on the west side, now you've got a heck of a walk. I think myself, a restroom in the cemetery would be a good thing.
I'd like to see it.
And if it doesn't interfere with your grant funds, and if we got rat tax to cover that, and we got the money to handle the lawn care side of it, it's gonna make it a lot nicer place than what it is.
So is that restroom gonna be open all the time, or? Because at one point I heard that they were just gonna lock it and open it when, like on Memorial Day and when, like...
No, we've ever really discussed it before as ours. We were just gonna open it up, and I made mention that for both of them, the police force could go around and lock them up at night.
Yeah.
Before they go off duty.
We'd be better off to do it on electronic system.
Yeah, we can even do that, but...
Be expensive, but be a lot better.
Well, I guess the memorial up there, the VA, you know, the Veterans Memorial right there, it'd be another asset to it. I just think right there would just...
There's a lot of people up there, like you say, and then you got the funerals and those guys up there doing their... Yeah, it's...
My only worry about it was the fact that I was taking money away from the park and your grant money.
Well, I just gonna comment on that. That's still kind of a moving target because we don't know what costs are gonna be, but they did take the... There used to be a 10% indirect cost that you had to pay back to the National Park Service. They did away with that, so that's another $50,000 that is actually in the project that doesn't have to go to them. So that's helpful too. And I did have some contingency. They don't really put contingency in the budget, so I just kind of built it in the different items. And I think there's some, you know, looking at the picnic tables that we're looking at, they're $1,400, and I had $2,000 in there each for those. So there's $10,000 there that we probably won't need for the tables. So it kind of all will balance out. The biggest expense, the high ticket item, is going to be the restrooms. So
this one here is $52,000.
The restroom?
Yeah.
Did you ever get a cost of? Did we ever get the estimate of
Mike Bowles
sewer line and everything over?
Mike Bowles is donating a bunch of materials.
$3,500.
Oh, is that all?
That's all it is. Lumber.
Yeah, the lumber is $2,350.
So $2,300.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I just thought when Mike and them had done the bid and everything too, they're taking 7.3% is what they get of the total bid that comes to them. Well, if you take the lumber, it's pretty near a wash.
Also, they'll actually build it, but they'll don't have part of it.
Yeah, they'll actually build it and do all that and they got all the bids out.
Well, my only worry was that this was going to be kind of a debate on where we put the restroom, and in my mind, it's a no-brainer that we need to do a new restroom at the park.
Absolutely, I believe that too.
So, however you guys have it, the other side, I don't have a dog in that fight, really.
Well, going back to the rat tax, we have a form of committee. and they kind of decide how.
That's true.
We use that money. But we can also borrow up to 10 years in advance on that. But we have a big project in mind. So maybe that, you know, the committee will ultimately decide, and then we approve it, I believe, as a council, but. You don't borrow ahead of time on that rep tax and help alleviate some of that burden of that $130,000, maybe we can shuffle some funds over to that restroom in the cemetery.
Well, and maybe it'll turn out that we can use more than what I have in kind. Maybe we can draw more on the public works to do more and cut into that $130,000 some too. We just don't know how that's going to all play out. That rap tax, if I remember right, there does have to be a committee form, and you actually have to treat it as a grant. People that want have to come and
apply
plead their case. And so in my mind, I think that the committee that's doing the park or the CDRA would actually have to come to the city council or whoever that committee is, I guess, and put in an application to get that. Is that the way you understand it, Mayor?
Yes.
The council, the committee makes recommendation, the council approves.
So the committee basically goes through all the applications, finalizes out the dollar amount type deal, and then the city council has to just approve.
So maybe the council will shoot before the hatch on that deal.
But I know we have the option to borrow too ahead on the rap tax money.
Yeah.
Borrow on future revenue.
Well, if somebody else comes in that's a nonprofit or something that wants to, the arts council or somebody that wants to put a grant application in and compete, I mean, that's what it, document a decision, and maybe they'll have a better case than we do. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that park, I'm with you 100% on the park.
Okay.
I want to make sure that's taken care of. So what, we need to make a motion on the restroom?
If that's what we're going to do, then yes.
Are you guys done with me?
Yeah.
I guess.
Thanks, Justin. Thank you. What's going on?
Well, being done, I'll make a motion to approve the $52,000. Now, there's $300 for the permit that'll also come off of that.
We got cost of running the sewer line there.
Yeah.
You have to run new power line too?
Yeah, we do.
Well, there's power over there. I don't know how.
Well, we got it. We'll have to upgrade it.
So you'll have to put a meter over there and upgrade it.
We'll have to keep the meter over by the road, but we'll have to run the conduit and the wire over to there. Because it's going to be electric.
So what is the sewer? How far are you going to go with that? Go over?
Clear over to 7-8 south.
It's got to go to 750, the nine holes right there from the Dave Hill house.
So it's got to go block and a half.
And then the one that goes down the corner there, wasn't there?
One that catches the house on the corner, it all flows to the north. And then there's a manhole down by the park, but I think it's coming across, Paul.
So do you run the main line?
You have to run the main line over that.
You can run that service. You can run the service that far.
You could.
Cannot.
I wouldn't recommend it.
So how expensive that's going to be? That's going to be pretty pricey then too, if we got to run the main line.
What it cost us to do that extension from Mark Allendale?
I still, there's a manhole in that intersection of First East and 8th South.
Not that I know of.
I pulled the lid, I measured it.
Yeah.
We'll go out and look tomorrow.
Okay. It's like 6 foot or maybe even 8 foot deep. I measured it.
That's probably within the 300 feet, isn't it? What's that?
Is it your maximum length of service line 300 feet?
Right around there, yeah.
I think it's within that 300 feet if there is a manhole there, isn't it?
It'd be real close to it.
It's about a football field.
Yeah. The manhole I pulled straight off was the one in front of Dave Hill.
Yeah, there's one in that intersection. I pulled the lid off of it.
Okay, I'll just, you guys vote the way you feel about it, but I'll make a motion that we approve the restroom at the cemetery.
Do we need to include the cost of utilities to do with that? Is it probably going to cost us?
Do we do that on other?
projects that we bid, but...
You for the conflict, though. When it comes, our cost is gonna be that $3,200. That's what that's going to labor. That's just natural. You know, if we could utilize their trench and stuff like that.
It's not just gonna do cemetery, too, it'll do that soccer field that's over there, too, they'll have a restroom there.
We'll still probably bring in the outhouse.
Huh?
We'll probably still bring in the outhouse for the soccer field.
You don't have to, but... Anyway, that's my motion.
I'll second that motion. Think you can do a 6-inch main over there where there's not gonna be anything else hooked on it. It'll cheapen it up a little bit.
Okay, the motion by Russell, seconded by Paul, was the dollar amount.
Well, it's $52,388.92, but it should be less than $300 for the permit. I haven't talked to them about that, but I don't think it would be a problem, it should be, because they don't have to pay for the permit.
Yeah, we do it free for the city county. Okay, so a motion by Russell, seconded by Paul, to approve the restroom in the cemetery for amount, dollar amount of $52,000. I'm gonna take the $300 off of the permit, so it's $88.92. Roll call.
Lane?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Russ?
Yes.
Robbie?
I'm gonna hold out vote on this still. I want to see more info. I'd like to see more information on the sewer. Whether we need to run a main line over or if we're gonna be able to tie to that manhole, so.
Mark that as known.
Yeah.
It's never gonna be that far to the middle of the block. We're not going clear to the corner. Why do we have to have a main?
If it's over 300 feet, you've gotta have a manhole.
To clean it.
I think state code says you can run a 6-inch line as long as you only have one connection on there.
Yeah.
Worst thing is we've gotta go by it every 300 feet for our truck in case we get a block in it that we can clean it.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to let anybody else, too many other people hook on there. I don't know if that opens up an option for other lots to hook on. You might want to consider an 8-inch just for the size of, I mean, for the size of pie. It's not gonna be that much. You're gonna be digging a trench anyway. But if...
What other properties have we got there that somebody else might?
Future cemetery. That's all there is.
Not the future cemetery, because the school district's about it with those tennis courts, and unless they try to put a bathroom in as a tennis court.
You know, that's what I was thinking yesterday, is I wonder if the school would be willing to participate, put a nice restroom to share or something. Because those tennis courts were a long ways away from the bathroom.
That soccer field, everything coming to the west, huh?
And then maybe you can build real nice. Well, I don't know. That's just the thought I had last night when I was standing through this.
So, what about the other restroom? Do we have to...
The park one?
Yeah.
We don't have to do nothing on it.
This says park and cemetery, so... Okay.
Because the grant was already voted on and approved. So that's just part of it. So basically, I kind of combined them together so Justin can come talk and tell us about that one and stuff. So, okay, Brittany, you tossed her in the swimming pool.
Yes. So, you guys all got my email about, about the pool popping out. They're not worried about it. I'm not worried about it. This is a sample of what it would be, the Pebble Tech that we want to use. The warranty is for 5 years. That is for all of the parts and labor. After that, it's good for 15 to 20 years. The warranty only covers 5 years. So, and we would go, the color's called White Diamond, just because it's the closest to what we have now.
Is this how thick it's going to be, the plaster, or?
I don't know. I don't have that. I guess is that it would be a little bit thicker.
Yeah, I like that. Look at the details up there.
Yeah, I don't have an answer, sorry.
So, where this fell, is it just plaster, or is it sheet rock?
So, it's, the pool is a cement pour, and then they cover it with plaster, and then they would cover it with the pebble.
But what's there that's failed now?
The plaster.
Because the chlorine tablets that was originally used, if you put the chlorine tablet down on it, it just eats away anything. A chlorine tablet will eat steel, plaster, and
why is chlorine tablets on it?
So we originally had a chlorine tablet feed system. And it would get clogged and the line and chunks would come through, where now we have a liquid system, so that's not an issue. Plaster does need to be redone every 5 to 10 years anyway. We're just having to do it at 5 years because we had a tablet system to begin with.
Okay.
So I didn't print off any extra quotes.
Yeah, they treated now the chlorine goes in the right system from the water before it put it in.
We don't
care. That won't be a problem.
No.
That part of your warranty is on how we treat it, how we get them to.
Yeah.
They have a startup pool, a restart recommendations, and basically you refill it with not soft water. You don't heat it for 14 days. You make sure that a bunch of chemical readings are all over the range before you start heating it. So I would like to have this done the 1st of March, so that way by the end of March, we're up and running again. Because it'll take about a couple days to drain it, about a week or so to redo the work, and then it'll take 2 weeks to refill it, make sure that the chemicals are where they need to be, so we would be closed for all of March. Which we don't have any programs going beyond our water aerobics in the morning and that sort of thing. So it would be a very good time for it.
Brittany brought up a good point today. Doing this in March, it was built in November, put in November. The temperature's going to be pretty close to the same, and that worry about pop-up or anything like that kind of goes out the window with that.
Yeah, it'll also be, when they built it, the building wasn't heated. There were no windows, the heat wasn't on, nothing. So now it is heated, and I'm not worried about it popping out, and neither are these guys.
What was the cost of that? Yeah. What was their bid cost? It was like
$180,261.05. Also on there, it does have remove and replace swim lane tiles. The ones that we have right now are black glass, which are slicker than snot. We actually have people who do flip turns and their feet slip off the wall. When we do rescues, like our feet slip a little bit. So that's just an extra $42,000.
Just.
Yeah, it's not a change. It'd be nice if we could do that, but it's not included in this bid. But it would be an extra $42,000.
So where does the money come from, the general fund?
Yeah.
Do we have it?
Dave says we do.
We do, but it's done cut into it an awful lot.
Yeah. But the cool thing is...
Well, it's getting done, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, I mean, if you...
It is what it is.
If you look at it, it's only about $40,000 more than it would be if we didn't do the Pebble Tech. So that means that instead of having to do this again in 5 years, we have to do it again in 20 years. So really, it's saving us a lot of money if we do it this way.
So. What's the revenues in the pool this year?
Pretty good.
Are they up?
Yes. Yes, they're up. Our concessions, sorry, my brain, our concessions is up higher, our passes, day uses, they're all fairly consistent. We're not down, I know that much. With the high school paying, we're actually higher than we have been. We also have a USA swim team that rents pool space, so we're up that way. We also have someone who comes in and teaches private swimming lessons, so he pays the rental fee there. So we're doing okay.
What's the high school pay?
$50 a swimmer. And this year they have 15. Last year they had 30.
I know, talking to you from, I mean, another city's pools. They didn't make any money.
Nothing.
No. Just kind of, it's something for the citizens.
That's right.
Well, in the schools, they have their swims.
In the schools, and everything, it's a necessity is what it is.
It's a great discussion.
First thing I ever done was got rid of the head of swim pool.
Yeah.
And it's full, isn't it?
Thanks to who went, Wally Francis.
Mike could have let get a hold of that property behind that where the old football field was.
So do we need $180, or do you want to do that other option?
I would love to do the other option. I realize that's $42,000 more. And it's not needed, like our tile's in great shape. It's just really, really slick. So what we could do is just do the normal plastering and then in 20 years replace it.
Replace the tile, or can't we put something over the top of it?
Can't they go in there and rough it up?
I bet they could.
That's what I think you need to look at, or something that you could, they've got so many coverings.
Yeah.
Or they might just be able to grind it to rough the surface up.
I know they got a paint out now that you can put on tile and bond to it.
Yeah.
So.
And we could try it, we just have to see how it would react to the
chlorine and
water
and
the plaster.
I thought we ought to bring somebody in before we throw that in here and look at that and see what.
Yeah.
Getting some kind of coating to take. Probably it'd be a whole lot less. I'd be surprised if it was.
It's also how long would it last?
It's probably as long as the tile.
Yeah, they don't do a lot of tile pools anymore because they are really expensive, but the ones that they have that are tile last forever. So I would love to have it retiled, but that would be over $22,000, $100,000. So, and I know that's quite a bit. Especially because we have to replace our boiler here within the next 3 to 5 years.
That's only another expense. That's another bacon. Yep.
I think we ought to just do the, and then we can always go down the road a little bit if there's something we could put on that tile or they put a grinder on it or something to rough it up.
I think we'd be better off just leaving it alone than I think trying to grind it or do anything, because we might screw up the tile and then you're back to ruining everything or putting stuff in through your pumps or.
And you don't want to tip it and break it because it's lost tile, it'll cut someone's feet.
Yeah.
I'm okay just leaving how it is.
I'd really be surprised if there isn't something they can coat that with that would just be slippery.
And I'll look into that and see what we can come up with, and I'll talk to the contractors and see if there's a way that we can do both at the same time. Okay. If we can find it appropriate and everything. So.
Well, I'll make the motion that we do the replastering for the amount of $180,261.05.
I'll second it. Okay, I have a motion by Paul, second by Lynn, to approve the replastering of the swimming pool in the dollar amount of $180,261.05. Roll call.
Lynn?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Russ?
Yes.
And Ronnie?
Yes.
Thank you, I'll make sure to.
Okay, next, IPP. Or IPA, whichever way I should say that, Cameron.
Either's just. Tyler for IPA.
All us East Boys call it IPA, or IPP.
I watched the meetings on this.
You kind of miss not hanging out here on Tuesday night.
Do you want some snacks?
You got snacks? Popcorn?
I can get the light right here, Shane. Just one question here. Should we have had the Park Cemetery, Park and Cemetery bathroom both on that approved? Because we already approved.
A grant?
Or we approved? We approved to go for the grant, so, so really right now on the parks, biggest reason I wanted Justin come is give us an update where we was with the grant, to let us know how it was affecting his grant or what that way. So that's the biggest reason I kind of combined those two together on the agenda.
Okay.
So really, I don't think we have to do anything on the Park Cemetery, or the Park restroom at this time.
Okay.
So I really feel good about putting it there and then going on the west side. Now you got both sides covered.
It'd be nice, I think it'd be, yeah.
Okay, I'll keep the lights here so we can see.
First of all, I really appreciate you giving me a little bit of time tonight to talk about the IPP renewal project. My name is Cam McCown, I'm the general manager for IPA, Intermountain Power Agency. I've been in that role just since this past January, predecessor.
And all the hot fire, and all the hot fire time.
I curse my predecessor's name every day for retiring. You know, we go through this, absolutely stop me anytime, happy to just talk. Any questions you have, I'm happy to address them. Just a little bit of background on IPA. So Intermountain Power Agency was organized back in the late 70s by 23 Utah municipalities, of which Mount Pleasant was one. And it was formed under the Interlocal Cooperation Act. It was the first interlocal entity in the state of Utah. And since then, I think there's probably dozens and dozens that have been created. Each 23 Utah municipality designates a representative to represent their city in the project, and so you're representing Shane. And of those 23 reps, a 7-member board is elected. And so to your question, IPA owns the Intermountain Power Project, and the Intermountain Power Project is what sits in Miller County. And the picture there, two very large generating units. We also have transmission systems. So two transmission systems. One, there's two legs of what's called the Northern Transmission System. One that runs west out to what's called Gander, Nevada, that services Mount Wheeler Cooperative. And then one that runs east to Mona. And that's where all the Utah participants take delivery of their powers at the Mona substation. And then the Southern Transmission System runs from the plant in Miller County, south about 500 miles to what's called Adelanto, California, just north of Victorville. That's DC line. So there's a converter station just outside that picture, actually, in Delta, and then there's a mirrored DC system, or DC, they're converter stations. It's generated in AC, converted to DC for transmitting long distances, and then in Adelanto, there's another converter station that converts back to AC. And so that's what the IPP project is, and it's been operational since 1986. So there's a map that kind of shows all of the purchasers to the project, a little bit small, but in Utah, ranging from Logan in the north to Hurricane in the south, kind of follows down the spine of the Wasatch and F-15 all the way down the south. And then the yellow areas are some cooperatives, they're also purchasers. And then in Southern California, six cities there, the largest being Los Angeles, Department of Water and Power. So while the Utah, 23 Utah cities are the owners of the project, the power is sold through entitlement shares to all of these purchasers. So all of these purchasers have a certain percentage that they have contracted for the entitlement to the power. So these two charts both demonstrated a couple of important principles. On the left, you see these are the entitlements to the power. Sorry, that's a little bit fuzzy. The Utah municipal purchasers combined equal about 14%. Then the cooperatives have about 7%. So combined, Utah entities have 21% of the power. And then the Southern California participants combined for about 79% of the power. Again, Los Angeles being the largest, at a little under 49%. And those percentages are really important because in addition to the EIP board, there's another governing body called the Coordinating Committee, and that consists of all of the purchasers to the project. And their votes at that level, at the Coordinating Committee, are determined by their entitlement to the project. And for anything to pass at the Coordinating Committee level, it requires an 80% vote. So again, a 21 and 79% split is pretty important. You need 80% for anything to pass. And it's worked quite well over the life of the project because it's just required all the purchasers to come together to find mutually agreeable solutions. I don't know that there's been anything at the Coordinating Committee that hasn't been a unanimous vote because you talked about it enough times before. You knew what was going to go and what wasn't going to go before you ever brought it to vote. On the right-hand side, you see the effects of what's called the excess power sales agreement. So in addition to your power sales agreements that you have with IPA, the Utah State also has excess power sales agreements with some of the Southern California purchasers. This is a huge, huge thing and important to understand. The excess power sales agreements allow the Utah participants, both the munis and the co-ops, to lay off their power to the California cities when it's not economic for them to take the power. And Shane and Oak can speak to this and what it means to the Utah cities. Over the life of the project, the vast majority of the time, the Utahns have not recalled their power. It's kind of like I've heard described, it's an arrow in the quiver, right? When you do a nasal plan, you need lots of options available. And so if this isn't one of your most economic options, you can lay it off to the California cities. They pay all the costs. If Utah cities aren't recalling the power, they don't pay a penny. So about over the life of the project, probably about 98% of the power is gone in Southern California. This last summer was the first summer, I want to say since 2013, that any of the Utah cities have recalled power. And just to show you what that meant, and again, Shane would be the best one to speak to this, but losing some other resources available, namely a lot of hydro, IPP power became important this past summer, and UMFS has calculated collectively the savings to be about $6 million for all the Utah cities by being able to recall their IPP power. So it's almost, a lot of times we get asked, what's the value of Utah cities? You're not taking the power, what does it matter? I think a relevant question is, what's the value of those excess power sales agreements? Because it's really unique setup. I don't know that it exists really anywhere else. Most of the time when you're part of a project, they're take or pay contracts. You're paying fixed costs whether you're taking that power or not. So it's really unique in this project that if you don't need the power, you lay it off and you don't pay a penny. The renewal, so we'll talk a little bit more about the renewal period. The current contracts go to 2027, and then renewal contracts kick in 2027, extend another 50 years, 2077. But that excess power sales agreement concept continues in the renewal period. That was something that, to be honest, Los Angeles, just for resource planning purposes, it's a pain in the butt for the Southern California cities. And Todd, when we started working through the renewal period, it wasn't something that they wanted because it's difficult to deal with. But the IPA board was, and other Utah municipalities were very firm that that principle needed to remain for this project to move forward for the Utah cities. And that kind of speaks back to the importance of this 21-79% split. They said that's important. And so that feature persists in the renewal period. I'll go through these really quickly. And these are available. Shane, I sent him an electronic copy of this, and he can distribute this to you so you have these. But over the life of the project, it's produced exceptional economic benefits to the state of Utah. Again, we hear a lot, it's a California project, what benefit is this to Utah? The fact that we have California participation, normally, as you probably know, with an interlocal entity that's formed by a bunch of municipalities, you're exempt from taxes, right? Municipalities, you don't pay property taxes, you don't pay sales taxes. But by bringing in those Southern California purchasers and being able to build it as large as we did, right, these are massive generating units, 1,800 megawatts that can service $1.5 million, or 1.5 million homes. Without that participation, you don't have the tax benefits associated with this project. And so we sent a lot of power to California. Guess what? They sent a lot of money to the state. So some of the benefits there, the tax benefits, again, as an interlocal entity, normally you don't pay taxes, but from inception, we have been a taxpayer. We've not received a penny of taxpayer dollars over the life of the project. We don't receive any tax dollars. All the money that is received by IPA is through the sale of power to the participants. So we pay property taxes, a gross receipts tax, which is like an income tax, sales and use taxes. So we're a substantial taxpayer and not a tax receiver. We've never received any of those incentives. So things obviously have changed over the last really decade and a half. I want to say that this Senate Bill 1368 in California passed in maybe 2006, 2007 timeframe. And fortunately, their contracts are grandfathered in so they can continue taking the power from IPP through their current contracts. But as you know, resource planning takes, you do the planning really decades in advance. You have to. And so discussions started pretty quickly after this to say, okay, what's going to happen post-2027? There was a lot of efforts made by a few of my predecessors to look for replacement customers for the coal power. And there are some things that make it difficult, like we talked about the magnitude of the project. 1,800 megawatts, that's a lot of power. And, you know, the Utah entities alone couldn't keep one unit operational just running at really low load. You know, 400 megawatts is more than the Utah municipalities can absorb. So, you know, they're talking to large utilities, you know, Pacific Core, Nevada Power, I think talked to Rio Tinto. They talked with a lot of entities, and there was not a buyer for these units. And there's just a lot of constraints there. You can see those listed. And on top of that, regulatory obstacles. And even since, you know, those early days, there have been more and more regulations that make it more and more difficult. It would add substantial costs to keep those coal units running. It would be extremely expensive to implement those. So the participants in this project worked hard to find if we can't continue operating the coal units, let's try to find a replacement. We talked about Ted Olson, he's the chairman of this board for a long time, and he spent put forth a lot of effort to make sure that something replaced the coal units, because in a lot of places you see what's happened there down by Lake Powell. That plant is gone and it's sagebrush now. There's nothing left there. And that's happening around the country. And it honestly easily could have happened with this project. Just nothing there to replace it. Unfortunately, between Utah entities working hard and, quite truthfully, Los Angeles still found a lot of value in this project. And so, you know, we've been able to move forward with the renewal project. There's a lot of potential at that site out in Miller County. There's a lot of things that combine to make it a very, very attractive location.
So I got a question for
you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
For what was the reason for doing away with the Navajo plant?
That's a good question. I mean, it's a lot of the similar type issues. I think it has a similar set of purchasers. I think a lot of that power is going to Southern California. So they no longer were going to take it. I think, I don't know what led to, I don't know why there's not something there to replace it. I know it's gone for the same reasons that our units are going to have.
Is this the environmental issue?
I think a lot of it has to be, right?
They just shut down San Juan.
Yeah, San Juan closed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just, they're talking about rolling blackouts down there now for the summer and everything, and yet they're shutting down power plants.
Yeah, but that's driving our costs down.
You look on the Sierra Club's website, they have like 400 and some coal power plants, only 300 and something more to go or something like that. That's their, like, one of their biggest things that they're shooting for. It's kind of, but what's replacing them?
Yeah.
When I was working for the power company, we had a little rip with California down there, and they just said, okay, if you don't want the power, fine, we'll sell it over here. And they come back begging. Yeah, it didn't take very long, and there was another one went all to Arizona.
And I think it is important, and that baseload power, and we'll talk more about the renewal project and what it looks like and what it is and how it kind of fits into the resource planning, but they view this project as important. A lot of it, I think, has to do with the transmission lines. That DC system is a huge asset. It already has capacity. So again, we can generate up to 1,800 megawatts. There's 2,400 megawatts capacity on the southern transmission system.
Right.
And they have exclusive rights to that system because really nobody else can take the power. It starts in, it's a DC system, it starts in Delta and terminates in just outside of the basin. And they've been the ones that paid all of those costs. Utah purchasers haven't paid any of the costs of that STS. Right? There's different components, and so you pay the costs associated with components that are relevant to you as a purchaser. So the southern transmission system, none of the Utah municipalities have paid any of those costs. It's been paid exclusively by the Southern California cities. So that transmission system already has excess capacity on it. When we transition to natural gas and it's down to 840 megawatts, there's even more capacity on that line to wheel renewables. And they need that line. So there's already some wind going down that line. There's a Milford Wind Farm that they tie into our transmission system and our switchyard. And I think you may have heard of the TransWest transmission project coming from Wyoming, and it's set to terminate just north of our facility as well. And they plan to tie in. So that transmission system is a huge asset, honestly, truthfully for us, because it makes the project still really, really important, but you also have to have generating capabilities there to run the transmission system.
It's just troubling to me. You say Utah only needs 400 megawatts.
No, the minimum load on one of those units is probably actually about 300, and the Utah purchasers to this project can't even take that much, 300 megawatts, to keep that operation.
It all depends on the market prices and all that other stuff. Is it competitive for Utah to take the power from my... But I know this last summer saved our bacon, as you can see. So it just depends on the market prices.
Well, California's controlling a lot of Utah's... Like, there's a lot of people that depend on these coal miners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the business is tied to them.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine how many people were affected by the Navajo and now this other one down here that just got down.
San Juan. And they closed the one in Price not too long ago.
I mean, you think about the businesses and the workers and everything that's tied to it.
Yeah.
And they're sitting down there in California controlling that.
Yeah.
That's what's troubling to me.
And I agree.
All the fishers over the mountain over there, you go over there on a clear blue day. And unless there's something going on in that power plant, and it happens once in a while, the emissions will go up, but you see nothing.
Yeah.
There's no black cloud floating across that east coast.
Yeah. But ultimately, what we were faced with, and what IP purchasers were faced with, is, you know, we deal directly with the utilities, right? We deal directly with Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. And they're engineers that are just trying to keep the lights on for their utility and operating under constraints that are placed upon them by, you know, political influences. And so, you know, they wanted to keep something at the site. And you know, IPA, what we were faced with is, again, LA, Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, post-2027, they could no longer take this power. It was illegal for them. And so... It's really no different than any other business. If a business has their largest customer that says, "I can't buy from you anymore," you either adapt or die, right? So I think that's what really we have to do, is if we can't sell that, can we sell something else?
So because the contract was till 27, that's why they extended it.
That's right, yeah, 27.
And because of their laws and regulations down there, they can't take this?
They can't take it. And so, again, that's the option. So what we're, the relevant comparison for this renewal project is, it's not versus what it once was, it's versus nothing. The renewal project, or nothing. We had no control over whether we could keep operating the call units. Because there was just not a market.
Oh, they need a few blackouts.
Well, I gotta be perfectly honest with you. In recent years when they've had some blackouts, the utilities that have access to the power have not experienced those. And quite truthfully, the renewal project, it will be a baseload project. And so I think it's still really important to them in the future. It's smaller. It's not 1,800 megawatts because they're having to build in, you know, all of their renewable portfolio standards. But the new project is natural gas converting to hydrogen, which is also a baseload fuel. So it's, even though it has a renewable component, because you need the renewables to produce the hydrogen, that hydrogen you store, I mean, we referenced the salt dome.
Then you get into the other side of the water consumption.
It's far less. We'll talk water a little bit later, but the renewal project will be using some
hydrogen. Is less than coal?
A lot less than coal.
Water consumption?
Yeah, yeah.
Where does nuclear fit in there?
That's a good question. I don't know the numbers.
But nuclear's not, we're going to drive.
One third, wasn't it? They told us up there?
Yeah, we're going to be doing diet crack cooling on IPP. Only water is the water that's in the SMRs or submerged in.
So moving through some of these, so again, the decision was to close the coal units in 2025. That decision was made in 2017 based on certain EPA regulations that with no you know, demand for the coal, there were EPA regulations that forced the decision, either some expensive modifications to continue just operating them for a few years or announce closure. We amended the current power sales contract that would have come before this body. Every city would have had to approve the amended power sales contracts that allow for a conversion from coal to natural gas. And then the execution of the renewal power sales contracts in 2017, that also would have come before your city council to approve those for your city. And again, the new contracts retain the excess power sales terms. So the renewal project is underway. We expect between the generating facility and upgrades to the transmission facilities, the total investment will probably be closer to $2.5 billion. We've issued our first $800 million worth of bonds for the generating facility. We'll need to sell more bonds over the next couple of years to complete all of that construction. You know, we think there's a lot of potential for development around the site. I don't know how familiar you are. Are you familiar with the salt dome up near that area? It's a pretty remarkable set of circumstances, the fact that our facility sits right on top of the salt dome. It's massive. It's about 2 miles by 1 mile, this underground salt dome. It sits about 2,000 feet underground, and you can solution mine out these salt and create hot caverns to store liquids in. Right now, there's I think 5 caverns they've already created. They're storing propane, butane, that type of material. But what will happen with the future of this project? When we're operational in 2025, the natural gas units, but they can co-fire 30% hydrogen at day one, and the plan is to transition to 100% hydrogen over a 10 to 20 year period, just kind of technology allowing. So you can take excess renewable power. You know the way those systems have to work. You have to build out more than you need because they're intermittent, right? So there's certain times of the day you have more than you can take, and a lot of times they just shut it off. They have to curtail it. It's wasted. So you can take that excess energy, use that energy to create hydrogen, store it in caverns. It's basically just a battery. I mean, you know, that battery technology is, gives you, what, a few hours? And a lot of, you have battery technology that they're installing at wind farms and solar farms, and so at night, maybe you can kick on the battery and it'll give you maybe 8 hours worth of energy. But with these salt caverns and storing hydrogen, you can really ship that energy seasonally. You can store months worth of energy in these caverns. And so that's why, even with, between natural gas and hydrogen, it'll still be a baseload type facility that's dispatchable energy. Obviously, wind and solar is not dispatchable energy. You can only, it's only there when sun's shining and the wind's blowing. So we've contracted with a group called Advanced Clean Energy Storage. That's a partnership between Magnum Energy. Magnum is the group that's already done some of the caverns, and they have the mineral rights for the salt dome, and Mitsubishi. So they partnered to form this ACES group. They've already received DOE funding, and their construction is underway to build. They're already drilling to get down to the salt for two caverns. They're already building massive brine ponds that support that. So we think there'll be a lot of development around this project. We already have 3,000 megawatts worth of interconnection requests from solar companies that want to tie into our transmission system into the switchyard. Again, we understand there are some loss of jobs. I think a lot of that will be, or at least some of that will be absorbed by surrounding new development. So let's see, we've already talked about all of this. So let's talk about water and hydrogen. So hydrogen, you'll hear about different colors of hydrogen. That just speaks to how it's produced, right? Gray hydrogen is the most common way of producing hydrogen. It's done through steam methane reformation, natural gas. And then blue hydrogen is that hydrogen that then you capture the carbon. Green hydrogen is when you take water through electrolysis, you split it. So you can see the numbers there. Producing hydrogen through using natural gas is much more water intense than green hydrogen. There was last week at the Public Utilities and Energy and Technologies Interim Committee, the legislature, last year's session, they commissioned a study by the state water engineer to understand water usage for different types of energy production. Namely, they wanted to know what hydrogen would require, what kind of water demand. And so I'd encourage you to look that up. There's a video. The state water engineer used University of Utah. And truthfully, it's because we had actually already commissioned a water study. We told, engineering has already demonstrated what our water usage needs will be. We were told you ought to go have this verified. Probably by like a land grant university. So we went to Utah State, they were the natural choice. They produced a report that said what we expected it to say, what our water use will be, which is far less than we use currently. And that was discounted because we had asked for it and commissioned the study. So the state water engineer used the University of Utah, and they presented their report just last week at that interim committee meeting, and it said the exact same thing. So they did it on a gallons per megawatt basis to show apples to apples how much water is used for different. They looked at hydrogen, coal, and natural gas. And hydrogen and natural gas are fairly close. Natural gas, hydrogen's a little bit more. Coal is a lot more. When you add carbon capture technology to both coal and natural gas, they shoot way up and use way more water than hydrogen will use on a per megawatt basis. So that study is there on the Public Utilities Interim website. This is just kind of demonstrates what our water consumption will be. The dots on the left, each one is 1,000 acre feet. This project, IPP was originally planned for four generating units, and before construction started, just demands changed it. So only two were built. And so we had already acquired water rights for four units. It's on the left a little bit inaccurate because we don't have water rights. We actually have shares in irrigation companies in Miller County. We do have like 5,400 acre feet of well water, but of surface water, we actually just own shares in the irrigation company, not water rights directly. But about 40,000 acre feet. Our maximum use was somewhere, it was about 26,000 acre feet. That's when we were running full load. We used about 26,000 acre feet. And currently we're running at far lower capacities right now for a variety of reasons. So right now we're only using about 12,500 acre feet, probably even a little bit less than that, truthfully. And in the future, you can see with the green dots, when the gas project is done, it'll use 6,500 acre feet. That's largely the reduction in size from 1,800 to 840, plus gas. Natural gas just uses less water already. 6,500 acre feet, that's primarily the cooling processes. And then when these facilities are burning 100% hydrogen, we use 2,500 acre feet annually to produce the hydrogen. So combined, we use about 9,000 acre feet annually when it's using exclusively hydrogen.
Why is that? Them tubes in that boiler take a certain amount of heat to make that steam. Why would it take the same amount of water to produce the same generation, irregardless of the source of the heat?
Well, okay. Now you're talking to a non-engineer here, right? But so currently with coal, you're burning coal. You're not using any water in the burning process. You're using that for steam, and so the 6,500 feet, that or 6,500 acre feet. That's the number that you compare against current usage, right? Natural gas naturally uses less water than coal needs, and we're decreasing the size of the units. So we're currently using 12,500 acre feet for cooling, steam, all that. When we decrease and we're using natural gas, it'll be 6,500 acre feet. The 2,500 acre feet, that's just to produce the hydrogen. So there's no equal comparison for the 2,500 acre feet because that's the fuel. We're not using water for the fuel currently, if that makes sense.
So you're not using steam to turn the turbine?
Yeah, no, we are. And that's built into the 12,500 acre feet. And in the future, it'll be 6,500.
That's where I'm confused because I don't understand why it would take less water.
These are the comparisons. Currently, we're using that much. At one time, when we were running 1,800 megawatts, we're using 25,000 acre feet. The natural gas units will use 6,500 acre feet because it's 840 megawatts.
They're cutting back on the megawatt.
Yes.
Yeah. And
okay, now it makes more sense.
And the other reason, the other place where you cut water usage dramatically in the natural gas versus the coal plant, there's a lot of water used in the coal handling facilities and pollution control equipment.
The dust equipment.
Yeah, dust suppression.
Oh, the evaporation tower, which you're still going to have that with this too.
Yeah. No, it's not cooling. Yeah, you'll still need cooling.
See, I worked in the power plant for 30 years.
Yeah, we'll still have cooling and steam. So natural gas just naturally uses less water because of most of it's the pollution control and coal handling that you don't need for natural gas. So all of our water is beneficially used every year. What's not used at the facility is leased back to the agricultural community in Miller County. The 45,000 acre feet, that was just an average at the beginning based on what's actually available. In more recent years, that not nearly that much is available just because of conditions. But everything that's not used is leased back to farmers, and so
Turn it back to us because they stole it from us.
Yeah, they don't need it. We just will take
it. It's kind of been that point where before, if they don't need all of it, let's keep it. All our prices, we'll take it. We're not producing it.
Can't speak for that, but I do know all of it's being used every year. So there'll be more available. If you'd like, I'm happy to send a link to the utilities in our meeting. That was we've had questions, people ask us, well, so if you're splitting water molecules, making hydrogen and oxygen, and you're burning the hydrogen, are you destroying water? And that question was asked again to the PhD gentleman, who's a PhD from the University of Utah, and said, no, that hydrogen forms back with oxygen molecules, and they produce water molecules again, and they go back into the water cycle. And he says that happens relatively quickly. It produces water.
So we had a representative come here and talk to us about hydrogen, and he was totally dead set against it because he says it takes so much water to make a little bit of hydrogen.
When I first heard this concept, I had the same thought. I was like, how much water are you going to be using? It's not nearly as much as I assumed it would. I was surprised. And it may have been the same representative asking questions last week of public utilities.
Probably was.
But again, and a lot of those questions, I've been asked, okay, what happens to the oxygen or the hydrogen after it's burned? I knew it combines with oxygen, but I couldn't say how much. But again, this gentleman who has a PhD said all of it. It becomes water again. Now, just like any other water that evaporates or goes up in a cooling tower or anything like that, it goes up into the atmosphere, and yeah, then it's going to go where it's going to go. You can't confine that within the boundaries of our state. It's just that's what happens. But that hydrogen becomes part of that water cycle that way. So that's just a couple photos from. On the left is the big drill rig that the ACES project is drilling down to the salt dome. On the right is some of the subterranean piping work that's going on for the gas units. Those are being constructed right next door to the coal units. And so we're on schedule for 2025 completion. Just a few key points. That layout structure is I would consider that probably the greatest benefit to the Utah participants, just the ability to lay out the power with no cost to you, unless that power is needed and it's economic for you, and then you pay for it. And then again, significant reductions in water use, I think is a key point. So.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is this technology been proven in this green hydrogen?
That's a good question. It really isn't a science fair. I say what's unique is doing it at this scale, bringing all those components together. Creating hydrogen through electrolysis, not a new technology. Storing products, even hydrogen in salt. So the salt dome, that's a really rare feature in the Western United States. They're not uncommon at all in the Gulf states. There's quite a few, and they've been using them for decades. The solution mine out and store products, and including hydrogen. Burning hydrogen in turbines is not new technology. Bringing all those together at this scale is a little bit new. And so I don't think it's a stretch to say that the eyes of the energy world are on this project. I mean, you see articles all over the world. But Japan may have hydrogen turbines already. Probably not 800, these are two 420s. And so there's still a lot of technological work to get it to, to be able to burn 100% hydrogen. The 70-30, that's proven. Mitsubishi already has those combustors available. So, what other thoughts do you have or questions?
So if you're splitting this plant in half or half a size, or is that still going to make it so we can still buy our power back, or is it?
Yeah, no question. Oh, yeah. So yeah. It's a percentage base, right? So whereas, I don't know what your entitlement is.
Like 0.375.
Right now you have 0.375 of 1,800 megawatts. In the future, you'll have about that number, just a slightly bigger of 840 megawatts.
We'll have 0.375. Right now it's 0.675.
You'll have less in the future? Did you decrease yours?
No. Now in the coal units, it's more. Because it's like...
You're talking megawatts.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so
yes.
Gotcha. So yeah, you just have roughly the same element of a small...
Same time. Same.
Yeah. Shane, anything you need to add, want to add from your...
No, I'm just curious about the technology, like what you guys have been approached with in like battery storage and stuff like that.
You know, we haven't really talked with anybody about battery storage. Right now, I mean, it's all Kevin is a battery.
Yeah. But like with the solar, you said 300 megawatts?
3,000 megawatts. Those are separate entities, right? These are outside entities that want to tie into our switchyard to send the power to some California down the line. So they have to find off-takers. They don't have off-takers yet. They've just basically put themselves into the queue to say, we want, and we're required by FERC to allow people into the queue to go down the system. So they're in the queue, but they still have to find off-takers, people to buy the power. And those are separate. Again, they're proposing to build solar arrays kind of surrounding the plant. A lot of that's civil land, truthfully, some BLM.
Is that big solar system down by Richfield, is that privately owned, or is that...
That's good, I don't know.
That's Pacific Corp.
That's on
Pacific Corp system.
That's Pacific Corp down there?
Yeah.
We do not have, I mean, we're just a single facility. We just operate the coal plant. And, you know, the future will just be the natural gas plant. We have quite a bit of land, so there may be opportunities inside our fence line to, you know, maybe we'll want to create, you know, produce our own hydrogen. Right now, we've contracted with that ACES group to produce enough hydrogen for 30%.
Go nuclear.
Over 30%.
How about the operating cost? I mean, you're going to cut yourself in half and have all that revenue, and now you're going to...
Well, you've got service that needs to be paid, right? So while we don't necessarily know annually what the cost will be just yet, that's still... because we're still in the middle of a construction project. Here's a key feature too for Utah cities. Your contracts with IPA are for natural gas power. And so unless you opt into the hydrogen component, you have the right to receive power from IPA at natural gas prices. So that's important because right now, hydrogen would not be more economic than natural gas. In the future, maybe. It's hard to say what, you know, technology does in the future, but your contract is for natural gas power, and so you have right to that power at that cost.
So natural gas is that much cheaper that you're going to recoup your revenue?
The Southern California cities that are hydrogen purchasers will have to subsidize that cost.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get those to me. You're getting rid of half of your power, your revenue source. And you still got that power plant the same size. I don't know what you're going to cut out of there.
Existing power plant will be gone because of
the
coal is fired.
Yeah, we'll decommission the coal once
you're going to get rid of the generating units that are gone.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I thought you were just going to convert them into natural gas.
No, they'll be decommissioned with it. We, you know, the discussion was, do we just convert what's there to be able to combust natural gas in the existing units, or do we build new? And the efficiencies of new plants, you know, far outweighed.
Well, it's good because the reason why they said that's kind of the route we decided to go is because our coal contracts were up in 2027 anyways.
Yeah.
So...
Well, this way you won't be shut down either, because then we'll just switch from one to the other.
That's exactly right.
More two or three years to...
Well, see, I was under the assumption that you were just going to convert the existing plants into natural gas.
Yeah. We're building brand new state-of-the-art units. Yeah, that, you know, fast ramp rates, that'll be a little bit more cycling than just running full out, full steam ahead. It'll be a little bit more reactive to needs.
Well, I want to thank IPP for buying coal from Coastal. When Coastal Corporation owned the coal mine up here.
Is it Skyline?
Yeah, Skyline. We're selling coal to IPP for $35 a ton, and on the market it was going for like $16 to $17. So we was locked in with a contract with these guys for like 20 years. And
I wish we could get coal.
And the day that contract was done, boy, they got rid of them.
So, Rodney, where's all the coal going?
Well, that Lila Canyon mine,
it's
starting on fire.
Yeah.
I'm back to seal it off.
And there's producing 3 million ton a year or a little more. That's a big deficit.
It's huge.
And Wolverine Fuels, you know, was counting on that 3 million tons to fill their contracts, meet their contract demands. And it's on fire and sealed right now. But we can only produce what we can produce, what the conditions will allow. You know, they'd love to produce more, but there's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting, so are we going to be okay in the summer, or what's it kind of looking like, Cameron?
Well, that's the hope, right? I mean, we're running on really low load right now to save coal for the summer. And, you know, and Ron spoke to it, there's not coal available to us right now, right? I mean, get as much as we can from Wolverine, as much as they can produce, and you know, we'll probably have to look out of state, unfortunately.
You still bringing it in from Wyoming?
We haven't for a long, long time. We have some tonnage contracted out of Colorado.
So, yeah, that's what I thought.
That we're getting right now.
Are there mines on the other side shut down besides what's...
A lot of them have, yeah. Well, the three longwall mines left is Lyola, Suffolk, and Scotland.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you got your river pillar mines, and they just...
What's the reason for that cost, or... Sounds like there's demand. There's demand for coal.
I don't know if the EPA regulations have just put them out of business, or...
What if it's cost? It's,
well, the customers just don't want coal. They can't... lock up contracts.
If you have a declining demand, it is hard to see, you know, large investors pouring a lot of money into developing new resources.
Well, there's a demand now. Well, you've got the energy crisis over in, you know, in England. That's going to be going on, you know, through this whole winter. They're going to be, you know, you got Russia and Ukraine and all that.
So, yeah, you're sure to all the coal yourself, aren't you, overseas?
A lot of it is going to Japan.
Japan, yeah.
We're getting over $300 a ton for coal.
Oh, my gosh.
Japan. So, we're going to sell it to who's paying the most.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're actually eyeing the
border. Well, they say, we touched on that the other day.
Yeah, so we rolled over to breach a contract when you're making $300 a ton. Who's most a contract that just you go pay pennies compared to $300 a ton? They are eyeing a new longwall mine, the old Trail Mountain mine. The project's been called Fossil Rock.
Where's that?
Just above Orange Trail.
Okay, so it has access to
the mountain. Well, what about and now we'll be an underground longwall mine, and I know they've submitted plans to Amshaw.
Shoot the plan up, dugout.
I'm not sure. I haven't heard much about coming out lately of what the deal is. They had a fire over there too, but...
Yeah. I thought they might go back in and open up that one where them guys are buried.
Crandall. So this is Trail Mountain. Well, they're calling it Fossil Rock now. They've got some big reserves and leases there. Mm-hmm. And they really want to go back in there and start going along mining that again. Well, that's Wolverine Mine, so...
Oh, okay. Is it Utah coal's like some of the best? It burns the hottest, and so they have to.
The vein's the deepest, and the ash is the least.
Yeah.
They mix it with the Indonesian dirt and the Australian dirt, and stretch it out further.
I remember when I worked for Castle Valley Blasting back over there, and we cleaned those smokestacks, and that was an interesting job. I was amazed because they said when I was working over there, they said they were adding gravel, some kind of gravel to the, because it burned so hot that they had it.
They had gravel. It's coal. Oh, not your stove, and your wood burning stove.
Yeah, they got blenders that they blend that.
Yeah, they do.
I think most of what we buy down here is from Suffco.
Well, that was interesting.
But that's kind of like coal's hot.
But I know Hunter's run into the coal problems too,
and
that, so it's like, because right now, what we're doing with Hunter, we're laying off everything from December, we're going to run in December for 200, but then January, February, and they got a big outage in March over in Hunter, so that won't be running in March, and so we're going to keep lay off those months so we can build the coal. Our coal pile for the summer.
Yeah.
I hope we can do it, but
And yeah, we're doing the same exact thing.
Most of that comes from Subco, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think Hunter's Subco.
Yeah.
Truck dealer.
I think they have to put that somewhere, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Now Deer Creek's down, everything's truck dealer up to Huntington too.
We get some truck tenants from Alton down in southern Utah.
Yeah.
But it's tough to supply the amount we need just through the trucks.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, you definitely need those trucks running all the time.
And so, yeah, it's difficult, hopefully.
Well, you see a lot of trains full of coal.
Yeah.
But none of us going to anywhere you talk.
They got going for $300. That's different tracks.
They might ought to take that gold across the top of that truck.
You're always welcome to call, reach me through Shane if you need, but happy to answer any questions anytime you have them, so.
Could you email me that?
You answered all my questions, thank you.
Thank you.
I thought it was, they were just converting the existing plants. I didn't know they were gonna tear them down and put in.
How much the tax revenues stays in Millard County?
Most of the property taxes, obviously. Some Florida, you know, we have transmission facilities in other counties, and we have a rail car service center in Utah County. But I think that showed $500 million over the life of the project in property taxes, and vast majority of that is Millard County taxes.
That's why they do that big, pretty gyms.
I know it.
They've helped build a lot of things out there.
A little like over in every county.
Yeah, same way, yeah. Now that new indoor practice facility for football. I don't know what it took to do that.
So do we have to take action on this?
No.
No.
Just information update for you.
Can you send me a copy of that thing?
Well, thank you, Ken.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it just, it is what it is.
But it's gonna take a major, they keep shuttering these coal-fired power plants with nothing to replace it. Eventually.
And more electric cars.
Well, yeah, they mandate electric cars and then tell them that they.
Shut your plants off.
Can't charge it.
Yeah. Shut your plants down and demand more cars.
Here's one thing that I, you know, again, fortunately, they're still willing to look to Utah to help supply their energy needs. And Utah will still, I mean, through this project, and maybe there's some others, will continue to see pretty substantial benefits. You know, taxes and some employment and things of that nature. And so that's what we're grateful for. And again, that's what, you know, Ted Olson and other members of the board worked really hard to. The thought of that going back to Sagebrush was untenable, right? It was a possibility, but they worked hard to find something that would work.
Well, it, just like you said, the transmission line is.
Well, that's gotta be.
That's really. Yeah.
And again, you need spinning mass to operate that transmission system, so the generation is gonna stay with it too. I'm gonna get on the road, that's all right.
Thank you. These electric cars are interesting. I seen a deal on Fox the other day. They had a guy that had a set at a charging station for 6 hours. He was going across country. He had to sit there and wait 6 hours to get hooked up. And then when he got hooked up, it took him another 3 hours or something like that to get charged. So he was 9 hours to fill his tank up.
Well, I know it's not the answer.
Then he had 382 miles. He said, I gotta stop and do this again. He was headed to board.
It's a long road trip.
It's not practical, buddy. The technology's coming, but it's not here yet.
No.
For sure.
I just laughed at him. Go buy another.
Taylor Parker or Barker?
Oh,
are you doing
Baker?
That?
Well,
kind of, yeah. He wasn't able to make it tonight. He's worked for a solar company. I'm under the impression, I think Natalie will agree with me on this, we need to maybe look into having a study done with how much solar's coming onto our system. He included, I'm going to include what he's proposing for Wasatch and for some of the other businesses, what they're looking at, in on this study,
to kind of see where we're sitting. I just don't want us to get into where we have all this generation coming on to our distribution. Because right now, you look at, where does generation go on to? Transmission. And then transmission steps it down to distribution, and then you deliver it. But we're working backwards now, when you got your solar coming on to your distribution, and then it throws a lot of things. I don't want to get to the point where we have to start putting up capacitor banks, regulators, and all this to help maintain our power factor. And so I want to do a study, hopefully with ICP, because they know our system, and see where we're sitting on our solar, so we know what we can allow on our system. And so, I know you guys can't make an action on that tonight, but that's what I'm kind of looking at with the with what included Taylor's suggestions on what we do with Wasatch and all that. So,
do we charge them as a city? Do we charge them a fee for using our transmission lines, or
who's that?
The solar people.
No, but I think with this new study that we've done, my opinion is with Natalie's time that she has to go in and figure this, their bills out manually and all this stuff, and with the time that we go have to go through all these applications and everything, I think we can charge their base fee like at least $23 an hour, or $23 per month. Have a higher base fee to kind of cover that cost for these solar customers.
Well, yeah, if they're producing power and using our system.
And that including Natalie's time and Mary Lou's time in that, figuring the bills and all that stuff, because our billing software don't do that. And so, and then my time making sure that they're throwing out the clean power, that they're not throwing out no 40, 50 hertz power. It has to be that to maintain that 60 hertz. And so I think we need it when we look at doing our rates, which we're going to propose next month, to have them come into effect in January. That's what we're kind of looking at, the plan. That we should have the solar customers pay a little bit more to cover some of our other expenses. So
that should be a surcharge, I think, for them using our systems.
Yeah, they're producing power. They're getting something on our dime, on the city's dime.
They are. And we're glad that we're only buying it back for 4 cents. And so it's not a true net metering, so to say. But they're getting the savings behind the meter. Yeah. And that's what a lot of them don't realize. They thought they were going to make...
So you're buying it for 4 cents.
The meter's not here tonight because... Solar is a crock of crap.
We're making 6 cents.
I agree.
I mean, we have to, you know, do a study to protect our system.
Exactly, yeah.
And so it's expensive. So it's expensive. So I think this $23 when we do our...
What's that, 22 now?
It's 21. 21 for residential.
I think if you put a fee on them, then maybe it'll discourage them. I don't want to do this.
And I would like to raise the cost of the connection. It's $400 right now. I would like to raise it up around to $800. Because I'm not including my time in there going through. I mean, there's so much time going through to review applications and working with West Coast consultants, going back and forth and with the customers. There's a lot of time that I didn't think, well... And Natalie's time too, because I asked a lot of Natalie, asking, hey, could you send this to these people and all that? And so
I don't think we need to include them in your study so that when we do that, we got something to back us up if we do raise that.
Yeah, they asked to buy it.
Turn around and say, hey, this is what we're facing, this is what's costing us, so.
Yeah. One other thing, so that's one thing I'm looking into, and then I'll get with Natalie on that and see what we can figure out. And then I'll bring it back to the council once I hear from ICP, and then see what you guys, the route that you guys want to go on that for next month. But another thing is Wasatch is also looking into maybe leasing or doing some out to the Contour Arena, because that roof out there is like a perfect ideal situation. Plus, the mayor and I discussed it, that's on our industrial park feeder, which is utilized a lot during the day. So with the businesses out there. So that'd be an ideal location for the solar coming back on. And so if we can maybe, we'll get with Wasatch and see if we can maybe work something out that way, if we want solar come on. I think this is a better route to go than doing a community solar, in my opinion. So you don't have, I'm worried about community solar, if you do a community solar and you have these panels out here, you might have a stranded asset. You know what I'm saying? You might have all these panels out here, like a 1 megawatt solar farm, kind of like what over in Rona, right next to the school. These people might be gung-ho for solar first, but then they might want to, you know.
Have you ever found out that a school district is...
I have, and I don't know how they're doing on... I talked to, what's his name? Mine just went blank.
Todd Hanson?
No, that is...
I talked to Todd Hanson.
Zach wasn't sure, but he said he was going to find it.
Todd told me that runs a school. Totally will run the school.
They don't run the school.
Well, that's why he told me.
I know my daughter says the power's okay. They have blinks every now and then, but it's the internet that doesn't work half the time.
Tell the dog, bright, bright, sunny day.
Zach was going to look into that for me and kind of see where, you know, kind of where that kind of landed. I haven't heard back from you yet. So as soon as I do, I'll figure that out. But no reason people are doing it, just the government's paying for it, you know. I'm all good with, you know, having a peace of mind, battery backup, you know, power's going to go out sooner or later, especially the way we're going. Who knows what's going to happen? And so, but I think we need to be, responsible. And I think we need to be smart about it, not just jump in and, you know, I think we need to be smart when it comes to maintaining our grid. And the same thing we want to look into maybe raising the prices for customers outside the city limits to base fee also because of the time and all that. So it's just a lot of things we kind of look at. So that's what we're going to discuss tonight when Taylor's here with Wasatch and the Contoy and having a study done. So next month, I might have something to come towards the council to put a freeze, not a moratorium, because that's a bad word, but just put a freeze on the solar for now until the study's done, and then we kind of know where we're sitting.
But we would still allow people to put solar on, we just wouldn't buy it back, right?
Right.
So like if they still want to put it on their own
home. Oh yeah, they want to do it on a home, they just can't come back.
They could, we just wouldn't, yeah.
Yeah, so, because I want to make sure we're maintaining that high power factor so we don't have any, because right now our losses, well, you heard what Don said, our losses are a little higher than most utilities, but a lot of this, that all that up Skyline that doesn't have load, and so that's why we're seeing losses. Running transformers without load on them, meters just sitting there without load on them, and so that's where you're losing that power, and so.
Well, even most of Skyline probably is weekend use.
Exactly.
Very little during the week.
Very little during the week, yeah. So is there any type of contract between these people generating solar power between them and the city?
Yes, there is. They have to maintain a certain...
Are we on the hook to pay them, or?
Yeah, we buy whatever comes through that bi-directional meter at 4 cents. And then Natalie credits their account. And so that's what you see on the...
That's what you see on those.
Yeah. So we do a freeze on the solar...
Well, we'll honor the ones we have, the 40 customers we have.
We just won't pick up.
We just won't pick up any new customers until the study's done, so we know where we're sitting.
Okay.
So that way they don't have to worry. Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to jeopardize our relationship that we have already with the people that we're working with, our customers, so. But it's just from whenever that goes into play, what date, whatever, that's approved, then that's when that's going to start until the study's done.
Okay.
It's going to take a while to get the study done, I have a feeling, because we're going to have to study each individual individual feeder. So right now, we got down at the old substation, we got 4 feeders coming out, and out of the new substation, we've got 3 feeders coming out. We'll have to do a study on all 3 of those. How the solar coming back on the grid is affecting the system. So. Oh, God. That's all Taylor has.
What about the UMs you have on there, too?
What was
it? You're not done. See, just started.
What was the UMs?
Discussion, action on the UMs.
Oh, as you know, the power prices are going up. I can't remember exactly what it was, what I was going to discuss. a lot of data right now, but the Colorado service, I think I was just going to discuss most of the projects. We just had UMS last week. I know our new CEO, he's concerned about the situation UMS is in when it comes to the pool. Because that's where we get a lot of our power market price is through the pool. But I think what a lot that's been affecting us is hydro being down. We had 2 hydros that's been down, which we have to go out and buy power. It's just having a hard time finding parts and getting people here to, you know, work on our hydros. And so it's just the way the economy is going right now. And then also, the Colorado Service Project, Lake Powell, they shut down to 60, only running 67%. So that's kind of affecting our bill also, because we had a lot in that, and that was cheap power. And then now Hunter, the situation with Hunter, no coal, the concern, that's what I was going to tell you about. The concern that I had as an executive committee member was, I don't want Pacific Corp burning our coal pile, UM's coal pile, and or vice versa. I don't want to be burning Pacific Corp's coal pile. And so, like I said, we're going to try to rack up those next few months. Now, since the power prices are kind of going, because this is kind of a slower part of the year when it comes to power purchasing. And so we're going to try to build those coal reserves up so we can run it during the summer months, June, July, August, September. But I don't know what our coal situation is going to be when it comes down to it, for sure. But I will get back to you guys as soon as I know they're meeting with Pacific Corp this week. No, next week. This week's Thanksgiving, though. So next week, they're meeting with Pacific Corp to kind of see exactly so we can get an idea where our coal pile is set, for sure. And so, but it also becomes a concern because our contracts are with Pacific Corp and provided that fuel. And so if they're not providing that fuel, then that's also becomes an issue that we're facing. And so that's kind of the dilemma we're in over there in Hunter.
I can see this getting worse, because if they're paying $300 a ton for that stuff, these other mines, it's finding out they're doing the same thing.
Oh yeah.
That's probably why you're getting what they have to give you over there.
My brother-in-law, I think I told you this the other day, my brother-in-law, he sees 10 trucks that go by there a day. One pulls in the dump coal. And so it's like, he's like, Shane, it's the lowest this coal pile's ever, that these old boys have ever seen.
Yeah, it used to be when I was over there, it was just a steady stream of
gas. Yeah,
running.
All day long, both plants.
So
I've seen them backed up.
But you're running into volatility of the gas prices now. The gas prices are all over the place now, the natural gas. As you know, Hunter, one reason why our rates were a little higher the last little bit was because Pace has been down. And usually kind of use Payson as a peaky, kind of, oh, this looks good. Gas prices compared to market prices, you know, we'll crank on Payson and kind of work that out for all the units, remember? But it's been down because it's going through a total overhaul. So.
You say that, or IPP coming on the natural gas too, you know, it's just.
Yeah, so what's, so what we're looking into is maybe doing a natural gas, what they call MIG, mobile integrated generating station, MIGs. A little gas plants in each UAMPS utility, and everything will be financed through UAMPS to kind of help shape these peaks. And so that's one thing we're kind of looking at. I know that's what Matt's doing up in Hiram right now. He's putting some MIGs in up there because his power prices are just outrageous. And they help shape this and those peak loads. Bountiful has some, Murray has some, Hurricane has some, Santa Clara has some, Logan has some, Springfield has some. So we got a lot of members, Lehigh has some, that MIGs that they utilize, and UAMPS is trying to get, to collect the information from all these MIGs, all these customers, to kind of run it as a UAMPS, to kind of, you know, run it together so we can help save everyone money in a way, bringing that on to the grid. And so I was thinking an ideal location for a MIG would maybe be down here by our old substation right next to it, because you got that natural gas thing right there. Your biggest cost is extending your high pressure gas line. That's the biggest cost. And so it might come down to where we might look into purchasing some property to put some MIGs in, if it comes down to where the UAMPS is doing a study, that might be an ideal location.
How much water do they take?
MIGs?
Yeah.
They just burn gas.
They just burn gas?
Yes, they just burn gas, yeah.
So you don't have to have the water issue?
Yeah, you don't have to have the water with them. If it was bigger, it's like a 2 megawatt.
Okay.
1 on 2 megawatt. If it was bigger than that, yeah, then we'd have to look into the water situation for cooling.
But how many megawatts does it take to run the city here?
We peak at 6 megawatts.
Six, huh?
Just over six. We hit a new peak in September. Out of all the months, we hit a new peak in September of this year.
It was hot.
Yeah. And so, so it's about 6.5 megawatts. And that's included, not running the hydros. If I run the hydros, it'd be, yeah. You get what I mean? So I'm not including the hydros in that.
Because they wasn't running during that.
Yeah, they were running that. During that, yeah. Well, we're sitting pretty good for the most part as the city in UAMPS. There's a lot more cities in worse shape than we are. So,
does that new solar farm come on?
Steel solar is going to be coming on this fall. And then we also are looking into a new era over by Beaver, which is another solar farm. It's 100 megawatts with 50 megawatts of storage, which is kind of nice. Which the cost comes in to be $36 per megawatt, which is pretty good. And so we're looking at that also, because if you got that 50 megawatts of storage to kind of carry that on, you know, when the solar drops right off, then you won't be hitting that peak when the solar drops off. So that would be a good project, especially if all that's included in the batteries and the battery maintenance and all that stuff. So that price. So hopefully they can keep that price, but I don't think they included transmission in there. And so we're looking into that, the transmission cost for that. So it might go up a little bit, but still 30. Wish we just give Connor $27 per megawatt hour. You know, that was good. Same with Chris, but. And one thing with IPP, but I think you guys need to be aware of the situation we're in. With IPP, with the nuclear we're gonna fill our ECT, our EPC, I should say, which is the scale of meeting it at, what was it, $58 per megawatt hour. It's gonna be looking at more like $80 to $90 per megawatt hour.
On that solar?
On that nuclear.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're going back to the negotiation table with NuScale and with Fluor to see what we can come up with, and also with the Department of Energy. Department of Energy, in my opinion, and I brought this up in the executive committee report with our CEO, I told them, I'm like, if they are so determined to have this project be a success, I think the Department of Energy needs to step up a little bit more, in my opinion. Because if we have Romania and Japan and what was another one? Czech Republic coming to check out this technology that's going to go through the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Committee. If they can build it here in the United States, they're going to build it anywhere in the world because of the Nuclear Regulatory Committee that's recognized here. And so the Department of Energy, in my opinion, needs to step up and help out, because it's not our fault that inflation's gone through the roof or prices have gone up and all that and everything. And so what they awarded with the grant, with the money so far, I think they need to also, in my opinion, do double that if they want this project to succeed. And so they're going back, UN staff is going back to the drawing board with Department of Energy to see what they can provide for that. See if they can help us out that way, because both Democrats and Republicans are both in on this project. They know there can't be a carbon decarbonization without nuclear in the mix.
Yeah.
And so, so that's kind of where we're sitting on that, so I'll keep updated on that. But yeah, with that coming at that price, but then who knows what the power prices are going to be, you know, come 2029. That's what I'm saying. So, all right, well, thanks for your time, you guys.
Yep, thank you,
Shane.
I get a little passionate.
I don't think we had any public participation because there's nobody here. Lynn, what do you got?
Oh, not much. Things are doing pretty smooth for staff. Games are going on.
Pretty quiet right now this time of year, but you done?
Yeah, okay. What you got, Bob?
I just have a kind of a question. The Planning Commission had a recommendation to replace Jason Clausen. So that recommendation, I'm wondering why it hasn't been brought to the council.
Because we haven't done it yet.
Haven't done what?
So Justin was one of them, Brett Nicholson, and Kate Beck. And I have talked to Brett. He said he would be willing to do it. My fear is with Justin, with him being on the Main Street Committee and the park, I think he's got enough on his plate.
I think Justin is probably the most qualified for that position of anybody in this city because of his employment and what he knows.
So
he's willing to take it. I don't see that that's...
And he is. He's willing to take it. But she called me and she said Justin was her first choice. It's not on the agenda this week, but it's just a concern that I have is she's made this recommendation and nothing's...
Why was Jason just got too much going on, or?
His church going down to some college.
Yeah.
Oh,
got out after that.
Yeah.
Being down there on the state presidency, resigned to that.
Anyway, I was just for her concern as she made the recommendation and hasn't come to the council.
That's Connie.
Yeah.
I forget how it reads on there. It's like mayor's supposed to make it. I can't remember how it says it on there.
Yeah, I kind of studied it out and...
Council approves it or something.
Yeah, the council either approves it or disapproves it, you know. Anyway, maybe get it on the next agenda.
Well, I don't, I'll talk to Justin, see what he thinks.
Another thing on the Aspen Village is everything a go for next spring or next summer. We've got that property then, so we can start cleaning it up.
Yes, we did get title to the property.
Good deal. Okay. That's all I've got.
It was a little bit of legwork, but we did get it.
Good deal. The payment back.
Well, we had to pay the guys $100 to come down to the title company to sign it.
Oh, yeah.
Back taxes. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, we've got it. It's in our name now. What you got, Russ?
I don't have anything. Stephanie pretty well covered and Shane takes care of me in these meetings. So I don't have anything other than what Stephanie has. I got a concern up there, a manhole on 50 East, about 80 deep, needs to be raised.
Yep, I saw my radar.
Oh, boy, I hit that last night and thought the front end was gone.
Yep.
My wife jumped right out of the chute and what? I was like, wow. I didn't see it. I was drifting along there. Yeah, it's pretty deep. Hit that range, that deep range, before somebody else comes in here, loses the front end. Because it's deep enough. I mean, it rattles. I'm in a new truck. The suspension there. I can't imagine some of these older cars hitting that.
I want to hit the windshield, miss it.
Yeah, I remember it turned out. That's all I have. I don't have anything. I just...
Roddy, what you got?
I don't have anything to report about.
2 hours to fix that.
You might have covered it all a little bit.
Yeah, I brought that up.
That's your report.
2 months ago.
Can't think anything new. We haven't already gone over.
Get in one air.
Do I feel like in the morning it's going?
That's a good thing. Sandra will be happy too. When I last talked to her, she...
I think we'll look at running it out. We need to look at lock system out there because you're not going to get the cops go out and lock that at night either. Wait, no way.
Well, I can tell system off, but...
When I get on details like the other night, I know that it was on. There's no way they're going to lock a bathroom.
The games go off.
You know.
Well, they just call them, can't get to it until they, just before they go home.
Yeah.
I mean, their presence, that would make a difference too, just driving through at night, locking them up there in the park.
Biggest thing is when the time change, or when it gets dark like this here, what'd be nice is have them on an electronic system so you can change it with the daylight.
There's lots of somebody in there.
Well, they could still get out.
Yeah, maybe they're alive.
They'd be able to come from the inside out.
I don't think with that system we have out to work, it is so nice to where it automatically locks at a certain time. You set it on a computer, it was really locked. You know, and when it gets dark,
I don't have a fire light every side,
then it could set to where it's locked at that time.
So I sold that because it...
Yeah.
They are expensive, but they are nice.
Well, that's where your vandalism comes in. When everybody's not around, that's...
Yeah. That's one of my biggest fears of now having a restroom in the cemetery is we're gonna pull a lot of people out of the park up into the cemetery to vandalize. That is my biggest concern.
Well, if you get the cemetery in the park, you won't have that problem.
Do you think you can put some like cameras up too?
Yeah, we're looking at it.
Yeah.
Well, because we, on our street lights here, we got the issue, ubiquity, I think I'll wrap it up to you guys, system. That measures all the lights. We can dim these lights. Right now, I don't know if you guys even notice, we dim these lights down at 40%.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when it's that late at night. And so we can do whatever, but they also included in this ubiquity, they actually have a street light, a road focus light, which we kind of use, that's has a camera in it. You know, so it just sits here and landscapes the whole time, that it sees motion and it zooms right in on it. Kind of like the camera that we have up to the back of our shop.
Truthfully, that's probably the way I look at it with the cemetery projects, putting on those light poles right there to where we've got...
So we're going to see that, and we can make that work tied into a GU, what's called a nuclear system. Yeah. We already got it, let's see if we can utilize it.
Yeah.
I tell you, the cameras and security systems take care of a whole lot. And once they know it's there, that makes a big difference too. All you got to do is hook one of them. And the word gets around.
Oh, we do each of the interesting stuff up on our hydros.
Probably kept somebody out there peeing. I always walk around anymore when I...
On trucks or wherever they're at. Couple things that I have. The employee party, December 8th. Everybody RSVP to Natalie, so she's got an account.
That's at noon.
Yes. Yep. Lighting this Saturday. What do you need from us other than syrup hot chocolate?
Oh, I still got to talk to Mike about that trailer.
Oh, yeah. Please.
I talked to him today and I forgot all about it. I'll do that tomorrow.
Okay, yeah. We just need something for the kids to stand on and clean. So.
We've talked about if we have to turn it just a little bit so you can get his semi, or you know, the...
Where do you want it?
Can I
just
hear
right here?
Yeah.
You can put the hot chocolate at the same place? Right here.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And I think you could just pull straight if you even wanted to, so you don't have to try to come down, you know what I mean? You could just pull straight and just be in the middle of this intersection. I mean, we've got all the way to 200 closed, but...
Okay.
They're not really planning on using any of this. Nothing's going on here this time.
So, and what time will we have this closed?
2:00.
So any time, 2:00, he can bring them.
Yeah, and we should be done at 6:00.
Okay.
6:00 or 6:30?
We have it from about 4:00 to 6:30, yeah.
So we just leave the truck hooked up to the trailer?
It could. We did that last year.
Yeah, we could. The only thing is we have, they will be doing the hay rides. Kevin Stallings is going to do the hay rides, and they'll go around this block.
Yeah, well, if we put it over there.
Yeah, that'd be the only thing, you know, so just the hay ride come around this side.
We're moving the lights going over, using the big trucks.
Over that, well, we're doing the hot chocolate type stuff.
Yeah, we'll have the lights turn up a little on there.
Yep.
Set up over here, right over the main.
Yeah.
Oh, Shane, what about a street light out on the far end of the runway? Out by Pack Trails property.
There's nothing on the whole runway.
Yeah, there is halfway, but...
Oh, yeah, we got a set of transformer out there.
There is one there already.
A transformer there?
We put one...
Did you put some cement there?
No.
Oh, okay.
We put a transformer there for that lift station, that sewer lift station.
Oh, that's right. Okay, we'll get that in.
Okay.
Update on the new well. We are closing our CIV loan Tuesday, so that is a go. And our landowners have, or our well owners have backed off a little bit. Now they want their money after the first year, so they got time to hide it. So we're good there. City Council meeting in December. Do you want two or just one?
Probably just one.
The second one will be on the 27th, right? We did a second one.
Yeah.
That's
I'll pull it up to see just to make sure, because we gotta. So right now we'd be on the 13th and the 27th.
Yeah.
And if there's anything comes up, we can do it by phone.
Really?
If you need votes on anything?
Yeah.
Done that before at the other.
Just have it on the 13th?
Yeah, so we'll just have it on the 13th and not have it on the 27th. Good with that?
Sounds good.
Okay. I think that's all I have.
I make a motion, we adjourn.
Oh, you're right.
Okay, I'll second that motion.
You got a lot of work, Robbie?
No.
You know what?
No.
Natalie, thanks for the drinks and the candy.
They're gonna be moving us to straight days next week. So.
Wow.
It's a downshift, so.
Maybe we're back to normal.
Well, I'm glad to hear you got a good contract anyway. I'm worried about that.
But we can.
So on that intersection, you know, there's just no